Chastek Studios presents an unabridged recording of Out of the Dark by Joanne Smith Ainsworth. Read for you by Nanette Bradley Dietz. This book was copyrighted in 2009 by Joanne Smith Ainsworth. The recording is copyrighted in 2010 by Joanne Smith Ainsworth. All rights reserved.
As a blind woman seen as a flawed commodity, Lady Lynette is used to the idea that she's unlovable. But her parents' plan to force her into a loveless marriage is too much. Wandering, upset, and lost in the cellars of the king's castle, the darkness doesn't frighten her, but the murder plot she overhears chills her to the bone. Worse, no one believes her, and the only one she can turn to is a Norman sheriff whose voice sounds disturbingly like one of the conspirators. Basil, Sheriff of London, is battle-hardened, fiercely loyal, and torn apart. He's falling in love with the Saxon beauty, and he longs to show her she is worthy of love, despite her physical limitation. But the very corruption she is helping him root out may implicate his own half-brother. How can he turn his back on family? For an Anglo-Saxon woman.
Out of the Dark, Disc 1. Chapter 1. November 1120 AD. Britain. Royal Residence, Tower of London.
If evil took up residence in walls, Lady Lynette muttered to herself, these cellars would be the perfect place for it. She wrinkled her nose as she ran sensitive fingertips along the corridor's massive stones. 40 years of royal habitation left behind vile smells. Stone corridors pressed threateningly in on her despite being wide enough to allow armored knights to pass with ease. They reminded her that this Norman castle, bordering on the befouled River Thames, was built inside a fortress housing its own armories and garrisoned soldiers. Lynette was having difficulty finding her way back to the chambers assigned to her by King Henry. The dim, grayed shadows that were her constant companions since illness took most of her sight at 8 years old failed to provide shapes to guide her. In these lower passageways, torches were few and far between, making variations of light and dark nearly non-existent and disorienting to her. I'm lost! The realization made the small hairs at the back of her neck stand on end. Anyone here? She shouted, her voice cracking from distress. The thickness of the walls absorbed the sound. No footsteps echoed through the corridors. No voices of soldiers returning from guard duty or servants hauling foodstuffs to storerooms. The unusual silence was worrisome. God's truth! They must be in the great hall for midday meal. No one would be worried in looking for her. Evelyn, her companion and personal servant, thought she was with her parents. Her parents thought she'd returned to her own chamber after their argument about her suitors, or lack thereof. It could be hours before these subterranean passageways again filled with people returning from their meal. Hours she'd be alone, in the silence, in the dark. With the rats, she shivered. I'll find my own way. Her fingers searched beneath the supple wool draping her neckline and froze when they encountered nothing. My good luck charm! It's gone! Bequeathed to her by her paternal grandmother, the crystal pendant quickly had become her talisman against evil. While wearing it, the guiding spirit of her beloved grandmama seemed near, keeping her from harm. She felt inside her clothing, hoping the necklace lodged there. Nothing. Lynette tried to swallow, but her dry mouth wouldn't cooperate. Fear rose. Inborn stubbornness, daily driving her towards independence, melted away. Without her protective talisman, she was exposed, vulnerable. Realizing she was spiraling into a frenzied state, Lynette reprimanded herself and restrained her mounting anxiety. Until being forced to accept defeat, she'd do her determined best to find her own way. "Before I lost my sight, I played in these corridors. I don't need my crystal." Lynette tried to remember how far she'd traveled along the passageways, just how many turns she'd taken down the winding stairwell before becoming stranded on the wrong floor. Angry at her parents, she distractedly rushed along, foolishly not counting doorways or steps. Realization that she was lost dawned on her only after chilled cellar air forced her to tighten her woolen cloak around her shoulders. Spots of brightness from burning torches, evenly spaced along the left corridor wall, emerged out of the surrounding gloom. The lighted torches were well above her head, so she could not take one with her. She was shorter and more slender than most women, a disadvantage in a section of the castle meant for towering knights and their servants. "If nothing else, I'll sit under a torch until a servant comes to replace it," she said with a wry smile. Trailing fingers along the rough-edged stone wall, she walked cautiously, her mind searching outwards, trying to recognize where she was. When she located an open doorway, she sniffed and allowed the atmosphere of the room to come to her. She definitely smelled potatoes.
"The last thing I need is to get trapped in some storeroom."
Lynette stepped warily across the wide open space, one foot in front of the other, until her right hand touched the opposite frame of the doorway. She continued to work her way along the passageway, disappointment plaguing her when she found no stairwells. Coming upon two closed doors, she took the time to open them and listen to make sure no one was working in there. At a cross corridor, out of long-standing habit, she turned in her favorite direction, right. After a few steps, she stopped to listen. In the distance, she heard muffled voices.
"God's mercy!"
Relief passed through her, making her aware her knees had been trembling. She had not realized how fearful she'd become until her anxiety fled. Lynette hurried toward the voices, remembering to trail her fingertips along the chiseled corridor wall. When close enough to distinguish the words spoken, she reined herself abruptly to a standstill. The shiver that traveled along her spine had nothing to do with the cellar's cold air.
"Destroy the vile Saxon hellspawn,"
said a man with a slight northern accent.
"Crush them once and for all."
"Chaos! Kingdom!"
a second man said in a whiny, nasal voice.
"King's brother, malleable, murder."
The cultured voice of the third man belied the evil in the words spoken. Alarmed, Lynette turned around and headed back the way she had come. Her heart pounded loudly in her ears, and pressure built in her forehead.
"Near these Normans is no place for an Anglo-Saxon."
Her soft-soled slippers barely made a sound as she sped along the now familiar corridor. Its coarse stone assaulted her fingertips. She rounded the corner, praying she'd done nothing to bring herself to the notice of these evildoers who spoke secretively of murder and chaos. Scraping sounds warned Lynette that men wearing armor were rising to their feet.
"They could be soldiers, or even knights.
For certain, they're not the kitchen help." Lynette crossed to the dark side of the corridor so torchlight wouldn't reflect off her flaxen hair.
"I'm grateful Evelyn dressed me in dark colors today."
Muffled voices bid each other farewell. Was she far enough away they couldn't see her? She pulled her cloak up over her light-colored hair to shroud her pale face and hide her exposed hands. Panicked, she forced herself to walk faster. She hoped the corridor was nearly as dark to them as it appeared to her. She hurried past the two closed doors, worrying that the upcoming open doorway might slow her down. How much farther to the stairs? Approaching footsteps confirmed at least two of the men were striding down her corridor. Breathing in ragged gasps, Lynette risked all. She ran towards a black spot she hoped was the open door, the opening now a haven instead of an obstacle.
What's that?
Where?
Near the end of the hall.
Gall rose in Lynette's throat, leaving a bitter taste. She touched the door frame and entered the musty storeroom. Exploring with her hands, Lynette struggled to find a hiding place. She choked back a shriek when a furry animal brushed by her outstretched hand and scurried away.
You saw that cat!
What I saw was too big for a cat.
The whiny voice sounded peeved.
I think you're fencing at shadows, the cultured voice said. Get a grip on yourself.
Stumbling, Lynette knocked over what smelled like a basket of potatoes.
Fencing at shadows, am I?
The men started running towards the storeroom. Lynette's hand touched an empty crate. She crouched down, lifted the wooden crate, and quietly dropped it over herself. Feeling around, she made certain its rim was solid to the floor, and no piece of clothing escaped to reveal her hiding place. Boots pounded on the cellar pavement, and armor jangled as the men approached.
Shine your torch in here!
The voice belonged to the man who had talked about murder. Torchlight seeped between crate slats, but not enough to outline the men who hunted her.
No one's here! He has to be. No one fled down the corridor.
Perhaps there's a trap door.
Lynette heard footsteps coming from the opposite direction in the corridor.
Oh, no, not more of them.
What's that?
The petulant voice hissed.
Someone's coming. We can't be seen together. Put out that torch.
Lynette listened to the two men hurry out the door. As their footsteps receded, the latest heavy footsteps came inevitably closer. Torchlight again probed her hiding place. The pounding increased in her ears as she heard an angry, bass voice say,
"Hell's bells!"
His blood boiled. Supplies stored under the very feet of the king were disappearing, and he, Basil of Ipswich, Sheriff of London, may have just missed the culprits. He'd heard voices as he descended the wide stone steps to the cellars, but thought nothing of it since castle servants and soldiers traversed these dark hallways. It was only when the light from his torch revealed the jumbled pile of potatoes that he realized the voices he heard could have been the pilferers. He stepped back outside the storeroom to look both ways. There was no sign of them in the torch-lit hallway.
Black-hearted curs!
Basil had ridden to the tower to assess the magnitude of the investigation laid upon his shoulders that morning by King Henry. He needed to know just what was stored in these cellars, how much had gone missing, and how it was secured.
Unlocked storerooms better be the exception and not the rule.
A tedious inventory could have been avoided if he'd caught the miscreants. He much preferred dragging thieves off to jail to counting baskets of potatoes. Still, winter food supplies were important to the crown. He'd do his best to see that no more went missing. The sheriff stepped back inside and looked around. He knew this neglected clutter was not caused by a retainer or a soldier. A castle servant would have repacked the potatoes or risked his livelihood. A soldier would have summoned a servant to clear it, just as Basil would soon do. The upturned crate and spilled potatoes bespoke a hasty retreat. The thieves were unable to take the pilfered booty with them. The dishonor to the crown enraged Basil. The monks who educated him taught him to act honorably and to be of service to others. King Henry's policies made life easier for citizens than those of the last king. To steal was unconscionable. To steal from this open-hearted king deserved death. It was within Basil's power to see justice done. He would not shirk his duty. He stuck his rushlight into a wall sconce and took a quick look around the large storeroom. Its thick walls were lined with stacked wooden cartons and bulging bags of flowers. Basil reached down to upright a crate.
What? A woman? Hidden under the storage crate?
She was a tiny thing, slender, with huge blue eyes and an oval face. His body responded to her beauty. Strands of silken hair escaped a loosely woven black netting to stick out awkwardly around her face. Bits of packing straw and dirt clung to the netting and to her dark clothing. Her lips hardened into a grim line.
She can't be one of the thieves, can she?
Outraged that he allowed her beauty to distract him from the king's business, he grasped her arm above the elbow, surprised at how fine-boned it was.
I could easily snap it in two.
He shook her to loosen her tongue.
Why are you hiding?
As she rose to her feet, he could see that her attire was that of a lady. Basil eased up on the pressure.
Answer me.
She struggled, causing him little discomfort, even after kicking his shin with her soft leather slipper.
Unprincipled ruffian! My parents have influence with the king. They'll have your head if you harm me.
Basil pointed to the seal of office on a wide blue ribbon around his neck.
I'm the king's sheriff. I uphold the law, not break it.
He gestured toward the spilled potatoes.
Are you stealing these?
Twisting her arm out of his grasp, she drew herself up to her full height, barely reaching his armpit.
Lack-witted underling, I'm lost. I came too far down the stairs and ended up in the cellars instead of at the great hall.
As she took a deep breath, her dark wool kirtle stretched enticingly over a rounded bosom. Basil allowed his eyes to linger there as he interrogated her.
The stairwell is only a short distance.
I'm blind. I couldn't find it.
Blind?
His brain became a jumble. Those bewitching blue eyes couldn't see. He shook his head, trying to clear it and refocus on his duty.
Who were those men?
I don't know. That's why I hid.
A change passed briefly over her face, as she denied knowing the men. It was impossible to tell if she was lying or if the change was caused by the flickering of the rush light.
Were they stealing potatoes?
She shook her head.
They wore armor. They don't need to steal food.
So it wasn't thieves who left hurriedly.
He hadn't let down his king.
Why didn't you ask them for help?
I didn't trust them.
And I don't trust you. They're Norman. Her sharp tongue sent acid rushing into his stomach. Early on, his mother instilled pride in his Norman ancestry. She also taught Anglo-Saxon inferiority. Blind or not, this woman touched a sore spot. He stiffened his spine.
I'm the king's sheriff.
Sheriffs can be bought. Even the highest in the land cannot be trusted.
Anger surged through Basil. His fingers curled into a fist.
Do you malign the king?
Not the king, those around him.
Was this the typical whining of a conquered Saxon, or did she bear a legitimate gripe? Whatever it was, he was in no mood to stand around arguing. His duty was to catch thieves. Basil's inherent need to protect those weaker than himself rose to the surface.
I'll take you to a safe place.
Lynette dusted herself off and set her clothes aright to recapture her dignity while she decided whether to trust this man. His towering, muscled body cast a huge, black outline against the feeble light of the torch. Power and domination emanated from this sheriff, and it frightened her. His was the northern accent of the third conspirator. They could know each other, even be related. Besides, he was the kind of man she should shy away from, the savage warrior she remembered from jousts before losing her sight. She should have put up more of a fight when he first uncovered her, but she'd quickly lost the heart for it.
"Give me your father's name and the chamber you occupy."
Shivers traveled up her spine from the timbre of his voice. Lynette heard the words as if from afar. Her usually superb hearing filtered through a thickening fog. Her clever mind, which grasped new teachings with ease, acted befuddled. The clang of metal weaponry made it easy for her to follow his movements. The aroma of leather and horse clung to him. He provoked unsettled sensations in her groin.
"I assume this belongs to you."
He had reached into his clothing and was placing a chain and pendant into her hand. Its metal was warm from his body.
"I found this on the stairs."
Her hand closed around the familiar crystal. She slipped the warm chain around her neck and sighed as the pendant nestled between her breasts. She was again protected by Grandmama's amulet.
"Woman, what chamber do you occupy?"
He repeated his demand, sounding annoyed. Sensations, however pleasant, must be denied, or she might sacrifice her life for her curiosity. The earlier overheard words placed her in jeopardy. The sheriff sounded like one of the three men.
"I must get myself back to my family, and quickly."
She'd just have to trust him, for now.
"Wilgive of Osferth, the Rose Chamber."
Basil was fuming.
"She's stubborn, closed mouth, and fighting me at every turn. She's too independent for her own good. She acts as if we're at war, and everything is a state secret."
He'd gotten her name, but only after convincing her that, since he knew her father's name, it would be easy enough to inquire and learn hers. Basil's frustration mounted with this blind woman whose fingertips lightly touched his forearm as he guided her out of the cellars. He was convinced there was more to her hiding than she'd admitted. Perhaps her virtue had been threatened. He was resentful that her lack of candor required him to set aside the king's investigation to see her to safety. Many sheriffs would ignore the plight of a Saxon, but Basil was taught by monks. He'd see justice done. Reaching the level for the Rose Chamber, he stepped out of the stairwell. Because she irritated him by her intransigence, he wasn't feeling particularly accommodating, and deliberately, without warning, turned the corner abruptly into her corridor. He was astounded when she easily followed. Still stupefied, he gradually became aware she was speaking.
"And so you see, my parents won't take kindly to my being lost. I can make it on my own from here."
"I never leave a lady alone and unprotected." She looked annoyed.
"You'd save me a lot of trouble. They'll not be happy with me."
"Your father and mother deserve to know you're safe."
She clutched his arm.
"Take me to my chamber first. I'll visit them as soon as I get cleaned up."
She sounded panicked, but he wasn't budging. Although he no longer believed her a thief, he'd keep digging until he learned the mystery behind her hiding under a wooden crate. If parental anger would release her tongue, so be it. Basil stopped at the door of the Rose Chamber and raised his hand to knock.
"Answer me truthfully, and I'll consider taking you to your chamber. What did those men do to you?"
She hunched her shoulders and gritted her teeth.
"Nothing."
The sheriff knocked loudly. Her richly dressed father answered the door, and Basil saw he looked puzzled upon seeing his untidy daughter.
"My dear, what happened?"
Lynette was wringing her hands.
"I got lost in the cellars."
"And more than that, if only she'd say. I am Basil of Ipswich, Sheriff of London. I found your daughter."
"There's no problem, Father, although I must look a fright."
She presented her parents to him with formal introductions. Her mother advanced on them, her face scornful. Lady Derwin towered over both Lord Wilfgive and Lady Lynette, her back upright and rigid as she chastised her daughter.
"You should know better than to wander off!"
Other than the father's first words, Basil picked up no sense of caring directed toward the daughter.
"No wonder she pleaded to clean up first. I'm concerned about your daughter. She was..."
"I was trying to find my way back," Lady Lynette broke in. "I tripped over some potatoes and got scraped up. It's minor. Don't worry."
"So that's how the potatoes got spilled. I've been trying to ask your daughter..."
Her mother shooed him out the door, her hands driving him away as if controlling a flock of chickens.
"Not now, Sheriff. I'll not have you questioning our daughter while she looks a disgrace."
He shook his head at the ill-mannered audacity of the woman. Lady Derwin pointed to the right, a rose-colored silk sleeve cascading downward from her outstretched arm.
"Knock next door and tell that servant to get over here fast if she knows what's good for her."
Basil watched, astounded, as the rose chamber door shut in his face.
"I'll play their lackey today,"
he grumbled as he approached the daughter's chamber door.
"Only because I must get back to the king's business. Eventually, I'll find out what happened in the cellars."
"God's truth! I don't care what your parents said or did. You shouldn't have run off."
Evelyn, her companion, personal servant, and friend since she lost her sight as a child, was upset with her.
"It's not like I thought about it. It just happened."
Lynette was sitting on a stool. Her companion had arranged a basin of soapy water, a cloth, and towel, and her hairbrush on the table. She detected the faint hint of rose water added to the water. A fresh set of clean clothing lay next to the basin. The pot of stew warming on the fireplace hook made her mouth water and her stomach growl with hunger. Lynette heard Evelyn dip the linen cloth into the basin of water. She sat still, allowing her companion to wash the grime off her face and hands. Evelyn took advantage of their friendship to scold.
"Look at you! You're all dirty and your clothing is twisted about. You look more like a street waif than the lady you are."
"It was dirty down there."
She hadn't told anyone about her experiences in the cellars, only that she'd gotten lost. With the sheriff standing nearby, she'd held off telling her parents what she'd overheard, even though it might affect the king. The problem was she wasn't certain she'd heard correctly. The cellars distorted sounds. Then, too, although the sheriff worked for the king, it was possible the three men were pledged to the crown as well. If they were corrupt, who was to say the sheriff was not corrupt? The opportunity passed when her mother ordered the sheriff to summon Evelyn to get their daughter cleaned up and looking respectable. Evelyn removed the netting with capable fingers and started brushing Lynette's waist-length hair.
"What did your mother and father do this time to upset you?"
"The usual.
Arguing. As if I'm not there. On the best way to marry me off and still keep our wealth intact."
Lynette's mother was first cousin to the late queen. In Lady Derwin's mind, the only hope for a suitable marriage was her daughter's superior breeding and family wealth. Even though her father's Wessex lands were appropriated by King William after the Battle of Hastings, the family still retained considerable wealth through her mother's Scottish estates, and she didn't let them forget it. At 17, Lynette was nearing spinsterhood. If her parents died while she was still unmarried, the king, as her guardian, might settle her in a nunnery and transfer her inheritance to a male relative, or confiscate it for himself. Her parents wanted no excuse to transfer more lands into Norman hands.
"Once again, my mother was pointing out my inferiority as a marriage prospect because of my lack of vision."
The mere thought of this old argument made her skin crawl. Her companion clucked her tongue.
They don't know you like I do. Any man would be blessed to have you as his wife.
At the time disease stole her sight, chickenpox claimed her older brother's life and severely pockmarked her father. Her high-born parents never recovered. Embittered, they grieved that their only surviving child was female and flawed. Illness cooled family relations with the crown. Normans were blamed for the tragedy, since a foreign delegation brought the chickenpox. It was in the Tower that disease spread, devastating her family. The scarring it caused was more than skin deep. After the Saxon queen died, their visits devolved into a despised duty, tolerated only because the family could not be seen as snubbing a Norman king. Her mother's cherished desire was to live on her own lands, where Saxon superiority was well established and no one dared slight her. Evelyn finished the brushing and was braiding her hair.
As soon as my parents can get away from this duty of attending court, they'll return home and find me a suitable husband of pure Anglo-Saxon descent.
Lynette wanted none of this. If she had to live with diminished sight, she at least deserved a man she cared for in her marriage bed, not one only interested in wealth and social standing.
"What are my chances of finding a man to love at Winter Court?" she asked Evelyn. "Someone acceptable to my parents."
"Not." The conspirators spoke quietly in a dark corner while guests mingled in the great hall, awaiting the king's arrival and the announcement to be seated for the evening meal.
"I overheard the father say that his daughter became lost in the cellars today."
The whiny voice of Count Maximilian de Celcy sounded anxious.
"So you were right," Sir Andre de Chester said,
the flickering torchlight reflecting from his thick, blonde hair and emphasizing his hooked nose.
"Someone was in the storeroom. It wasn't just the cat, as Corbet insisted. I wonder where she was hiding. The Sheriff of London found her. Blast his miserable, interfering hide."
Andre smirked.
"My half-brother has a habit of sticking his nose in where it doesn't belong."
Andre scratched his goateed chin as he looked around. The king's favorite hounds slept under the oak table where golden goblets marked the places for the king and his daughter. Hundreds of candles and torches lit walls hung with gigantic tapestries to dampen the cold. Fresh straw and evergreen needles covered the wide pavement stones on the floor, masking the stench from yesterday's rotting food droppings and animal feces. Minstrels played lyres and pipes from a mezzanine balcony.
"Which one is she?"
Andre flexed his muscles threateningly, making Maximilian anxious. His co-conspirator had a handsome face, but a black heart. Maximilian gestured toward the opposite wall of the high vaulted grand hall. Andre had the height and breadth to make him feel inferior, and Maximilian resented him for it.
"The one sitting on that bench in the shadows. She's blind. It doesn't matter that she sits where there's no light."
Andre smiled.
"Blind? Christ Jesus, that is providential for us. Has she spoken? Do we know if she overheard?"
"Not even a whisper. My Anglo-Saxon sister-in-law is a friend of the woman. I've visited and heard no gossip."
"Good. No one must learn of our plans."
"She may not have heard a thing. The storeroom is far from our meeting place."
"A pox on this king,"
Andre said.
We made it look as if rebel Saxons are robbing his tax collectors and stealing his grain. His father would have taken an army out to slaughter them by now.
Andre's face darkened in anger.
To rid this land of the Anglo-Saxons, we may have to forcibly free his weak-kneed brother from Henry's imprisonment.
We can bring him home from France to take over the kingdom.
Sir Andre straightened and stared across the great hall at Lady Lynette.
We'll have to make sure she doesn't talk.
Maximilian's stomach clenched.
No killings, he hissed. Not in the king's residence. We're in deep enough as it is.
Lynette had been uncertain all afternoon whether to involve her parents in what she overheard. She struggled with it all through evening meal. Now they were back in their tower chambers, and she was decided.
Father? Mother, I have to tell you what happened this morning.
As her mother turned against the candlelight, Lynette saw by her outline that she still wore a tall, silken coif to cover her graying hair. Her parents believed in making a show of their wealth whenever they appeared in public.
We know what happened,
her mother said, sounding exasperated.
You got yourself lost, just like we predicted.
Her mother heaved a long sigh.
It's about time you learn to accept your limitations.
Lynette dug her heels in. She lay a hand on her crystal pendant, rubbing it between thumb and forefinger to sustain her courage.
I overheard some men talking. I think they're plotting against the king.
Another flight of fancy, daughter?
Her mother's tongue sounded sharp and unkind.
You're always seeing people who aren't there. It's our fault,
her father said, sounding weary.
We over-educated her to compensate for her infirmity. Her imagination gets overheated.
Lynette wrung her hands, hoping to find the words to convince her parents.
This is real, Father. There were three of them. I only heard a few words, but they talked of chaos in the kingdom.
Who were these men?
Her father asked.
Were they Norman or Saxon?
If they're Saxon, I might join them.
He emitted a bitter, mocking laugh. Lynette could see her oversized mother bearing down on him as her petite father cringed back into his chair.
Husband, do not speak those words, even in jest.
Lynette tried to divert her mother's attention.
Their accents were Norman. Although they used no names, I'd recognize their voices. They must be of some consequence.
They wore armor. Her mother turned away from her cringing father to confront Lynette. Planting her fists on her hips, she made a formidable opponent, outlined by candlelight. Lynette could feel the anger pouring out of her.
Don't get us embroiled in politics!
She's right, daughter.
Her intellectual father's voice was conciliatory.
Speak no more of this, her mother insisted. It's hard enough for Saxons these days. Don't make matters worse.
End of chapter 1.